come to order. The clerk will note the roll. We have in the packets the minutes from the May 12th meeting of the Tax Committee. Representative Magnus moves approval of the minutes of the May 12th Tax Committee. As many as are in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. This time we have some introductions to go through. We have two new members of the Tax Committee. So our government may be shrinking, but the Tax Committee is growing. Representative Alice Hausman, welcome to the committee, Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I read my email very carefully, and I don't know if it's a Tax Committee myth started by a cunning staff member, but I'm taking no chances, and I'm not making the mistake that a new legislator made in Representative Queasley's committee, who brought apples as the treat.
Oh, dear.
I won't make that mistake. So someone will present this to the chair, and he doesn't have to share if he doesn't want to.
Oh, no.
Well, Representative Hausman.
Funny.
Oh, no.
The chair is of is overwhelmed, but to those of you who have observed the chair of the Tax Committee, this is a leaner version of him. I have been on Representative Atkins' uncle's diet since December 1st.
Chair, he's dead now, so if you notice in the paper.
So it will be shared with staff and members, and food is probably the most important thing we do in this committee, Representative Hausman. So thank you, and welcome very much.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jacobson.
Seeing the smile on Representative Atkins' face, I believe these snacks are Atkins approved.
We also have another new member of the committee who has not made his way here, and that is Representative Vanderveer, who will be joining us this year. We have we don't like very much change in the staff, but change is good, and Mr. Mossman has moved on to the Department of Revenue. I was not even called by anybody at the Department of Revenue asking my opinion of Mr. Mossman and how I would think that he would fit in prior to his hiring. Commissioner Salamone, I didn't even hear about this until Mr. Mossman gave me a call, but he is with the department. I'm sure we'll see him over here. And we have a new fiscal analyst. Marie Zimmerman is our new fiscal analyst. And why don't you introduce yourself, Marie? Which once again proves that the House really is the upper body. And we have heard from our page from last year, Andy, the player coach of the Cologne Cardinals. I don't know about the rest of you folks, but when I think of Cologne, Germany, I think of Cardinal baseball. But we have a new page this year, Mike Reiner. Is with us, and welcome to the committee, Mike, and we look forward to your assistance. He's formerly the speaker's page, which again shows you the relative position of the Tax Committee. finally, there is a VFL is Brian still here? Isn't he?
Brian,
you haven't left, have you, Brian?
No, this is the old staff.
Oh, this is the old staff. Heck with them.
Literally,
as you know, I do try to start on time, even though we were late today. If you're not going to be here, you will get an automatic excused absence because you do have certificates of election, and It would be helpful if we knew you weren't going to be here, but don't worry if you get caught somewhere else, etc. Please, members, and more importantly, please, lobbyists and guests, turn off the pagers, cell phones, and refrain from the use of anything that emits noise. And we will talk about amendments when we have business in front of us. Well, with that as prologue, in the tax bill last year, there was a study on local sales and use taxes to be done by the Department of Revenue, and I believe that's in members' packets, and we have with us Commissioner Salamone. Oh, there is one farewell that we have to do. The former Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, Ray Krause, has been appointed by Governor Pawlenty to be the Chief Hearing Officer of the state of Minnesota. He's probably here because he's already nostalgic. But I'm sure that we speak for everybody on the committee, Ray, in which we wish you all well for your new position, and we will miss your insights and help during the session. But thank you very much, Commissioner Krause, or Judge Krause. I know this guy and applauding won't get you any breaks in the rules, I'll assure you. Representative Rukavina.
Jerry only lasted less than a year, and I was just starting to enjoy pounding on him, and now he's going to be gone already, and I hope I don't get a DWI or anything wherever he's going. So, you know. I'll have to hire Atkins.
Well, with that as prologue, welcome Commissioner Salamone. Welcome back. I guess the Senate confirmed you. Did they not, Commissioner Salamone? So those 35 files you had under review for audit have all been cleared up, Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, let me apologize for not calling you about the change in personnel. I knew Matt Mossman's reputation was so stellar in both bodies that a call for a reaction was, I didn't feel necessary, but would have been politic, perhaps. I apologize for that. Also, thank you for recognizing Mr. Krause's change. It's a big loss for the Department of Revenue, a big gain for the state. I'm glad to have had him as long as we have had him, and looking forward to continuing to work with him in a slightly different capacity. And by the way, Mr. Chair, just for the record, I'm not on the Atkins diet, if there was any question about that. There should be at least a copy of the report and perhaps a four-page sheet of highlights in your packet, and what I'm going to do is work off of the four-page, the fold-out page of highlights to make a few points about the report. We made a similar presentation a couple of days ago in the other body, and I think it went longer than I expected it to, and I will try to be a little more brief today. I know that you have other presentations scheduled. Mr. Chair, I think you probably know as much as I do about the genesis of the mandate. I've always thought that the mandate sprung from a frustration with the growing number of requests for local sales taxes, perhaps a lack of an overarching policy on when projects ought to be approved or not approved. Certainly concerns about the fairness of the process, both maybe in this body as well as outside. Among the communities. The mandate requested that we report on certain items such as the current use of local sales taxes, the approval requirements, and some of the background. We'll talk about some of that. We also have been asked to make very specific recommendations on the role of the local sales tax in the Minnesota state and local tax system, the criteria for evaluating proposals, the feasibility of having the Department of Revenue make the decision on approval or non-approval of requests for authority, the advisability of having a local referendum or reverse referendum, and whether a pre-proposed referendum should be a condition for authorization. I think we got bogged down a little the other day in the Senate on some of the background here, so I'm going to go a little quicker than I did last time. I know there are a lot of new members on the committee, at least in the last 2 years here, and so some of the history may not be real clear, but the short version of it is we have had a state sales tax since 1967. It's a, sort of the newest major tax adopted by the state. It came in the context of having to find funds for property tax relief at a time when the property tax was very, very high nationally, much higher than it is now. And subsequent increases in the rate, I think, by and large, have all been associated with attempts to provide more property tax relief and to deal with state budget problems. If you look at the calendar, the dates on which those rates were increased, they're almost all associated with state budget problems. So the exception of 1971, when that was the Minnesota Miracle year, where there was a very deliberate attempt to sort of rewrite the state and local relationship, raising state taxes dramatically and providing many new formulas for state aid. But apart from that, if you look at the other dates, those are early decade dates on which we had significant state budget problems. Seems like a pattern that early in the decade we seem to have problems with our budget. There have been significant base changes, and I won't go through any attempt to try to summarize those, but the base is always changing on the sales tax, as you know. There are many bills that come here to do that. But we really have not been a big user of local sales taxes. I think that's no secret. When we did the Minnesota Miracle legislation in 1971, a very specific prohibition was enacted to prohibit the use of local income and sales taxes. It was a matter of policy. I think it was an expression of a policy preference to not have a lot of local tax options and instead to raise revenue at the state level and provide a certain amount of equalization in a property tax relief. And that prohibition remains in effect today. Prior to the prohibition, there were a handful of large communities that had a local sales tax, either by local, through a local charter, or by specific state authority. Cities like Minneapolis, Bloomington, Duluth, St. Paul, and Rochester. So we have the limitation in place, and we do have local sales taxes that have all been approved by the state legislature, case by case. We also have on the books, I think since 1987, a local option for a lodging tax of up to 3%, provided that the funds are used to promote tourism. So it's kind of, the funds are maybe not technically dedicated, but it's clear that the intent was that those funds be used to promote tourism. There are about 60 cities that have that tax, and I'm told we together they raised about $8 million. Well, because of the prohibition, the data clearly shows that Minnesota is not a big user of local sales taxes. If you look at local sales tax revenue as a percent of...
Representative Dorman has a question, but before I recognize Representative Dorman, I would note in the audience a former member of this body for 6 years, and then he went to the state Senate. He represented Albert Lee, and despite that, I supported him in his race for governor, Representative Dorman. Former Representative and Senator Paul Overgaard is with us today, so welcome, Senator Paul Overgaard. Now to the current member from Albert Lee, Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I have a question for you first. How do you want to go through this? Do you want to let him go through his presentation and then ask questions? Do you want to ask questions as he hits the topic areas, or what would you like?
Seeing that the commissioner is expressing absolutely no preference, if you have a question, Representative Dorman will be happy to take it right now.
Great. Okay, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Salamone, you touched a little bit on the change that came about in 1971, and if I read from the report, it says this signaled a clear preference for reducing local property taxes with state aids instead of new local option revenues, and you talked about the distribution from the state standpoint. Is the position of the administration that this is still good policy, or how does the administration see that?
Commissioner Salamone.
Mr. Chair, the administration, the governor has not stated a preference for more local sales tax options at this point. So I'd only be inferring, if I answered your question directly, I would be inferring a position that that at this point the position is that there need not be a generalization or a broad authority for a local sales tax option. That'll be reflected in our recommendations.
Right.
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, maybe I didn't ask that very well. The policy, I think, in 71 was to get out of it and take the winners and losers and find a, at the time, considered to be a fair way to equalize this. I think about the time we brought in some of the LGA programs and things of that nature. I think last year we had saw a shift away from that. And so I'm curious what the position is on the administration, if they still think that programs like the LGA program and this, the way to distribute it, are good ways, or where you're all coming from.
Mr. Chair, first of all, the context of the 71 prohibition was a session in which we were rebuilding the entire state and local relationship. There were very significant state tax increases. And obviously, doing that, you would expect that there would be an attempt to not also encourage more local option taxes, particularly where they might cause greater disparities in revenue-raising capacity, which would be the case with a local sales tax. I'm sure even back then, probably more so now. But with regard to the position on the role of state aid, I think the position would be that we still think there's a role for state aid, and that we ought to have formulas that make sense and that are very efficient, and we're not sort of subsidizing things that do not need to be subsidized. So I don't think this administration is opposed to having aid programs that support local government. We also had to deal with a very difficult budget issue for last year, and the magnitude of the cuts reflected the magnitude of the challenge and the problem that we had to deal with. So I don't think you can infer too much, or at least I would advise that you not infer too much from the size of the cuts as to sort of what the long-term view of state aid is. Clearly, we've been on a long-term, I think a long-term journey to tighten up the aid formulas and have them be more targeted to communities that have demonstrated need. And I think that's fine. I think that's, you know, there is a role for the state to have provide some degree of support for local government. But it needs to be thoughtful.
Please continue, Commissioner.
There on the bottom of that first...
Representative Rucavino?
To that point, because Commissioner has piqued my curiosity about subsidizing things that don't need to be subsidized. Because, Commissioner Salamone, you were around here. In fact, I believe your organization supported a lot of the tax changes in the 99-2000 and 2001 session, and I contend that it's those tax changes that have done serious structural damage to the state of Minnesota, and I don't know if it can be corrected without some either major more cuts in fare distributions like LGA, what happened last year, or by tax increases. I just don't think it's going to happen, and you probably know, Commissioner, already what the forecast is going to be and have a leg up on us, but I suspect it's not going to be pretty again. But to the end, that to the point that Representative Dorman was trying to make, Mr. Chair, members, Mr. Salamone, and talking about subsidizing that does things that don't need to be subsidized. You know, can you tell us about the education and transportation levy takeovers, which I believe cost together about 1.2 or 3 billion a year? Where does that go as far percentage-wise to districts that are property wealthy, we'd consider property wealthy, as opposed to districts that we consider property poor? Do you have those types of percentages?
Representative Rucavina, in your question, do you just want to hold it those two takeovers, or do you want to include all the other takeovers in the bill? because there was more than just education and transportation that was dealt with as far as state takeovers and untangling the relationship. Is that shorthand for the takeovers, Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that those two are the bulk of the $1.2 billion.
Commissioner Salamone.
Mr. Chair, I don't have data for you, Representative Rukavina. By the way, I can't see you, so forgive me if I...
Most people don't want to.
I think the ones you mentioned are examples of what I was talking about when I said that, you know, there is a case for some state support for things provided at the local level. Education is a great example. Now, that was a significant change where we took over the entire foundation base, if you will, the general education formula. I think prior to the 2001 session, we had been working on taking over human service income maintenance programs at the county level. So there's been a history of trying to identify things that have a high level of state interest and funding them directly with state funds and taking them off the property tax. And I supported that in 2001 because of the net result being that you make the remaining local levy more local in nature, and therefore perhaps can sort of wean ourselves off of having to feel so responsible for local levy increases to the extent that they're more local. I know that's not directly maybe answering your question, but that was the motivation and the reason why I supported those changes in 2001.
But please continue. I have a follow-up, Representative Covino?
I'll save it for another time.
Commissioner Salamone.
Mr. Chair, members, at the bottom of the first column, there's a list of the cities that have local sales tax authority, 10 cities and one county. By the way, the focus of this report is general sales tax revenue, not the lodging tax and the liquor and some of these other local excise taxes that are out there. We focused on the general sales tax, and for that tax, there are only 10 states, cities that have it: Duluth, Mankato, New Ulm, Rochester, St. Cloud. St. Cloud really is a four-city collection there. Hermantown, Proctor, Two Harbors, and, of course, Minneapolis and St. Paul. For the most part, those are fairly large places, with the exception of the three, Hermantown, Proctor, and Two Harbors, which have a population under 10,000.
The closer you get to Doug Johnson's Senate District, the better you did.
Now, a corollary to the short list is the fact that, I don't know that I gave you the number, but the local property tax is a percent of total local taxes, state and local, is 3% in Minnesota compared to about 17% on average for other states. So we are, by that standard, and not a big a local sales tax community. The flip side of that is the property tax as a percentage of local taxes in Minnesota, is, state and local taxes, is 94% compared to about 71% nationally. So our communities are more property tax dependent, in part because they don't have other local tax options. There are statutory requirements that we enacted in 1997 to force some uniformity on the local sales taxes in the structure of them. That's listed there at the top of the right column. Probably the most important ones are that we require a local resolution prior to coming to the legislature so that we know that there's local support for the request. We require voter approval prior to imposition. A key piece of this is that we require that local governments have to tax or not tax the very same things that the state does. We're not allowing communities to design their own sales tax. And I think that's a good thing.
Do you have a question, Representative Linder? I'm just looking for the page.
I'm just getting the page to get them a copy of this.
That would probably be helpful. We will have a quiz at 11:30, Representative Foles and Vanderveer. Commissioner Salamone.
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair. Oh, Representative
Dorman, I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you mentioned local approval being required, and as I look at the main report, I see that there's been some that have not required that local approval and some that have, and some city council or whatever. And I think I heard you say that you thought it was important that there'd be local approval as part of this process for a local option sales tax. What about the other taxes, the excise taxes, the, you know, if you want a liquor tax, same standards, same tax policies, make sense there, Commissioner?
Mr. Salamone.
Haven't thought a lot about that, Representative Dorman. I would think that might be useful. I don't know that I would make it a requirement.
Representative Dorman.
Well, the reason I asked that question, Commissioner, is I think some of the, as I understand it, some of the stadium groups are coming forward recommending some local taxes, specifically without a referendum. So I was trying to get a feel for where the administration would be on that type of thing. And I would assume that they would remain consistent and require that approval.
Mr. Salamone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, I would assume that also, but I don't know, you know, given the nature of these sales tax proposals, they are not exactly sort of run-of-the-mill requests for authority, but so I can't give you a definitive answer on that.
I don't know.
I think, Representative Dorman, that the Chief of Staff, Dan McElroy, at the last Stadium Commission meeting, made his, or at least on behalf of the governor, said that if there are going to be any taxes, that it's going to be voted on. You know, I don't know where that gets you, but, well, you know, we'll find out first if there's going to be a stadium proposal, which we don't know that yet. Secondly, if there's going to be any taxes in that proposal, we don't know that yet. And then we'll find out if there's going to be a referendum requirement. And we'll find out if Chief Staff was speaking for the governor at that meeting or if he was voicing a personal point of view. I suspect he was speaking for the governor, but time will tell. Mr. Salamone.
Mr. Chair, we were asked to look at the types of projects that are funded with the existing local sales taxes, and we've listed in the next bullet point the major types of projects, and they tend to be very large projects, many of them having regional impact: hospitals, airports, water and sewer infrastructure, parks, civic and convention centers. Almost without exception, maybe the one exception is the City of Duluth has a general authority. They use their local sales tax for general revenue, and so that's an exception from what appears to be sort of the norm, that these taxes are used for large projects, and many that we might agree are regional in nature. There's an appendix in the full report listing taxes that were authorized by the legislature but not imposed, and we put it in there to give you a flavor of what those would have been used for, because there was in the legislation, I think that was a question of us. And that shows that those taxes, though they were never imposed, would have been used for the same types of projects as the ones that are in place. The next bullet is a little more on local approval requirements. When we, when communities come to the legislature with a request for authority, they bring a resolution, and the resolution has specifically, we require that it include the proposed rate, the use of the revenues, the amount needed for the project before the sales tax expires, and the estimated duration of that time period. We also require that the local referendum prior to imposition be held at a general election, not a specific one, so either a general state or general local election. Obviously, when communities come forward for authorization, the legislature can add or detract from that list of requirements as it chooses, but that's sort of the cookie-cutter approach that we have in current law. On the duration and reauthorization, clearly there have been a number of local sales taxes that have been reauthorized. When sales taxes are initially authorized, there is usually a fixed period of time put in statute, and it's a period of time deemed to be sufficiently long to raise the revenues needed. The exceptions to that are Minneapolis and Duluth, both of which have sales taxes without an expiration date. And I, Mr. Chair, members may know more of the history of that than I do. There's also minor differences in the case of Hermantown and in the St. Cloud area sales taxes, where there's a date, but there's a little bit of wiggle room. For example, the St. Cloud sales tax has a specified deadline, and if there's funds left over at the end of that, if it raises more money than needed by that time, it can be redistributed across those communities, the four cities involved, five cities involved in that sales tax. I'm sorry, four cities. So there's a little variation on the theme.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Salamone. If I look in the Appendix E in the full report, if I look at a city like Bloomington, you've got a 7% or 6% lodging tax. If you compare that to the amount of money compared to, say, Duluth and the 1%, they're similar, or it's a significant amount of money. Do you know, does that expire or not expire?
I'm sorry, the Duluth sales tax?
Lodging.
Oh, the Duluth lodging tax. I don't believe, and I'll defer to staff, I don't believe there's an expiration date.
We have a former city council member from Bloomington on the committee who can tell us all about the Bloomington lodging tax. And I would suspect, Representative Lanchesky, that that's to promote Bloomington throughout the country.
It's dedicated to tourism. It's not used as a local source.
So there's no line item in the Bloomington budget. There is no capital project in the Bloomington budget dedicated. You're putting newspaper ads and print.
We wish it was dedicated to Bloomington use, but it's not. And actually, Bloomington has three other taxes that aren't local sales taxes. It has its admissions tax, and it has a lodging tax and a liquor tax.
Where are they admitted to, Representative Lanchesky?
Well, that's Camp Snoopy and those kinds of things. So that was part of the complicated financing design before I was a legislator or a council member to prepare the site for the Mall of America, and those are local taxes, but they're not used in the City of Bloomington's general fund or in any other Bloomington fund.
Ms. Dalton, do any of these three have an expiration date that you know of?
Mr. Chair, I was actually just, I don't think Bloomington's have an expiration date, but I have not looked lately.
They don't.
Duluth has an expiration date on some of theirs because they're tied to funding of their convention center.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lanchesky.
That's right, they don't. And just for the committee's information, Bloomington was given authorization by the legislature before I was a city council member to impose a local sales tax option and never exercise that option. So it has the legislative authority to do so and has chosen not to. So it could have a local sales tax option, but it does not.
Well, Representative Dorman, before I recognize you, part of my problem with some of these taxes, if they're not used for a dedicated purpose like tourism promotion, which is what a lodging tax is supposed to be used to, and I don't think we've ever deviated from that, is the ability, and I think Commissioner Salamone will get into it, to export the tax. And I can think of no tax that can be exported easier than the liquor and admission tax in Bloomington. I mean, I may be wrong, but I don't think that people in Bloomington quite drink, 30 million a year. That's $300 per capita, Representative Lanchesky. I know that you like to have a good time in Bloomington, but I would suspect that 90 to 95% of that tax is exported. And I would point out that people pay for services in the City of Bloomington through property taxes through facilities that they use there. When they go to a bar, they pay part of the drink is a property tax on the bar. So it's not like they're getting city services for free when you use City of Bloomington, but are the liquor and admission taxes going into the Bloomington General Fund?
Mr. Chair, I don't think they are. I think they are set up through a complicated... and you probably know better about this than I do, Mr. Chair, because when the Mall of America's financing took special legislation here to create all of that, I do not think those funds pass through the general fund. In fact, we wouldn't want them to, because it would make us look like we're spending a lot more money than we do, and it would increase the size of our fund dramatically.
Okay, I'm just kind of...
I think Ms. Dalton and Mr. Michael are thinking this through.
We could call former Representative Himley and find out how this happened. I am suspicious, Representative Lincheski.
I'm not sure, because the Port Authority was... we could find that out.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Michael.
This is not based on my personal knowledge, but based on the department's report. The admissions tax in Bloomington and amusement tax does go into the city general fund. The lodging tax and the on-sale liquor go to pay for the mall.
Repair the bonds.
Mall development, which that I do recall from having worked on that legislation.
Right.
Representative Dorman.
Well, that was, Mr. Chair, that was going to be my point. You framed it as a CVB tax that we're buying ads somewhere. And I don't think that's quite what that tax is used for, but it is a significant amount of money that is raised and spent in Bloomington, and is paid for by and large by people outside of Bloomington. And so
when the bonds are paid off, what happens to the tax, Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not absolutely positive, but my general recollection is that they expire, but that I would have to check that to be absolutely sure in the 86 legislation. And I think it's also worth noting, which I think probably Commissioner Salamone said before, that the Bloomington admissions tax is one of those taxes that was actually enacted before the Minnesota Miracle, and so it was grandfathered, and that's part of the explanation why it's a general fund tax.
So it was a stadium for that.
Right. There was a stadium in Bloomington that was paying that tax.
Remember that old stadium?
Well, we're going to move off of Bloomington before I talk about the Kelly Farm TIF provisions that are on the old Mets Stadium site, the single most developable parcel on the North America landmass. And Representative Lincheski, I heard that it could be as much as $100 million worth of TIF on that site, because the way that TIF district works is it's on a percentage basis. So if a developer puts $1 billion into the site, they get $100 million worth of TIF.
That's correct.
Good work if you can.
It's an incentive process, yes.
Representative Hausman has me on the incentive
process. I do want to remind you, because you and I feel very similarly about TIF, that I believe it was Representative Himley who carried that legislation, and Representative Blatz. So I was really not privy to the design of it. I know you were a tax committee member
You weren't. 85 and 86. I wasn't elected till 88.
Well, and I have to say our Supreme Court Chief Justice was an excellent legislator, and I think she fought really hard for Bloomington, as did former Representative Himley. And I know it was a very complicated proposal that the legislature enacted, but you're correct that there is a huge incentive to do more there. And part of the perks of doing more is you get more TIF. That's correct.
Well, we can do a whole lot of economic development for $100 million. But Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll maybe delay my question because I see we're going to discuss that. But my question had to do with fees as to whether or not a community, if they cannot raise due to them not being allowed to by the vote, if they can substitute a tax with a fee. So I see my point would be is I can wait with that when you talk about fees on table three.
Commissioner.
One last point, Mr. Chair, on the first page. I mentioned earlier that except for those three small cities, the local sales tax is kind of a big city or big place tax. And the projects for which the revenues are used are generally large and regional in nature. We did in our conversations at our public hearings on this, came to understand that there's very little agreement on what regional means. and what a regional project would be. And so that's something that will sort of dog us through this whole thing. I said when I reviewed the hospital, airport, water, sewer list, that those were sort of regional things, and we might all agree on those, but we may not agree on other things that might be considered regional or not regional. So that's a definition maybe down the road as we look at maybe tightening up current legislation. We might want to try to define that somehow. The next page has a set of policy issues, and this may be a place where we can save a little time, Mr. Chair. If you were going to have a general discussion about should we have a generalized sales tax option or a massive expansion of the current case-by-case project-based sales tax, I think this is a good list of issues to worry about. The first one, number one, local accountability and flexibility, is really one of the nicer ones. It's not really a problem. It's part of the reason why you might want to try to provide more revenue diversity. And that is at the local level, the more options local communities have to raise revenue, the better, you could argue, the better they're able to sort of match up what they feel they need to spend money on with a way to raise revenue. And if it's the case that the people who make the spending decisions are largely the same people who have to pay the taxes, you'd have kind of a pretty neat system in terms of accountability. So I didn't want to just start off by assuming local sales taxes are bad things. There's a case to be made for some local revenue flexibility. But the rest of the list of items here, these policy considerations, are more in the line of things to worry about. And the first one, Mr. Chair, you've already mentioned, tax exporting. To the extent that a community can do a large amount of exporting of its tax, that is, have it be paid by non-residents, you get less accountability in the decision making in that community. That is, they are able to spend more, raise more money, and perhaps do things that maybe even their own residents would not want, because a large part of the tax is being shifted outside.
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Salamone, wouldn't the same thing be true of industrial tax?
Mr. Chair, property tax? Certainly that's true. Every tax has some degree of ability to export. So it's a general concern about any tax, and even at the local state level. It's not just a local level thing. We were asking the mandate to try to provide information city by city on the ability to export, and Mr. Chair, I have to say that we were not able to do that, in part because it would be very data intensive to do that. We would need more time and, I think, more money. By the way, we had an appropriation of, I think, $10,000 for this study. It's in the front of the report. It's something worth working on longer term, but we can tell you that for the state sales tax, we know that we export about 3.8% of it outside of Minnesota. And so, obviously, that number we have from our tax incidence study. That number would vary dramatically from community to community. It would depend on how much a non-resident population is located near the borders of the community. It would depend on the size of the business base and the extent to which they're selling things outside the community. So we know conceptually how exporting is done, but to get an exact estimate would be very, very time-consuming. We do know from the public comments that we took, we heard numbers ranging from 15 to 50%, as communities said, as they speculated about how much of their tax was paid by non-residents. So more work needs to be done there. I do think if you pushed me for a crude estimate, I would look at the share of property tax base that is commercial industrial. And I provided an appendix in the report, and I don't know if it's on the handout, but in the back of the report there is a chart showing the variation in the share of commercial industrial, page 27, for cities greater than 10,000 population. And the chart shows that the statewide average for that percentage is 24.3%. That is, statewide, communities have commercial industrial is 24% of their property tax base. The range is from 2.9% to 34.5%. So of these cities over 10,000.
Well, Commissioner, I would still think that there is great variation in that. Even CI wouldn't necessarily be a good proxy.
Oh, absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Because, you know, I see Queasley here, who has a hunk of Rochester. And, you know, they have Mayo Clinic there, and they're also a regional center with a lot of townships around that are, you know, fairly large, and a lot of people go shop in the city in that area. And I don't think, and I think that their CI base would be a little bit lower per capita simply because of their industrial mix. So I think that they would have a higher export number. You can get to a city like, don't mean pick on Representative Harder, like Worthington, in which it doesn't have the retail base, doesn't have the town people in townships going into Worthington. They kind of look at other places to go shop. Mainly, they probably go up to Mankato or something. So I would suspect that their ability to export, or Sioux Falls, I would suspect that the exporting out of Worthington would be very low. So I think that there's great variations over and above any CI sort of measure. That's just me.
Mr. Chair, that's quite right, and it reinforces the point I was making earlier, that to really do a good estimate, you'd have to take all those kinds of things into account. And that's why we found ourselves not able to do that for this particular report.
You know, let me ask a question about data that the department has. Target, do they file one big form with you, or do they file a form with the specific stores broken out?
Mr. Chair, it's my recollection that they file a consolidated, I think a consolidated return with the locations broken out. And I see heads nodding in the right direction.
Okay. So you know, if one were really interested in pursuing this, we could probably ask for you to pull sales data for specific cities and get sales per capita and ask the question, is this, you know, are they really more shopper intense in this community rather than somewhere else if we really wanted to pursue it?
And having done that, that would be just a piece of the whole exporting thing. As you mentioned, the Mayo Clinic, you have a different element there. It's not commercial, but it certainly draws a lot of people into the community from outside.
Yep.
One of the concerns I think the body would have to think about here, if we were talking about a major expansion of local sales tax, are the potential impact of that on the state's ability to manage its own revenue system. As you know, we now have a state property tax of about $600 million. I think that's the only example where we now have the state and local government sharing the tax base. And I think maybe time will tell how that's going to work out long term. But the point here is that if you have an expanded local sales tax, then the state might be confined in its ability to raise revenue from the sales tax, because doing so might make it more difficult for local communities to exercise that same base. For example, if taxpayers are resistant to a tax rate increase based on the combined rate, state and local, if a state was contemplating a tax increase, a rate increase, they may find that would be difficult to do because of the level of local sales taxes. Or you might have a situation where a local community, expecting that the state is about to raise its rate, they might want to get in and raise theirs first to have an easier time getting it approved by their taxpayers. Maybe we're not at that point yet with the level of sales taxes we have, but that would be a concern I would have.
Wouldn't you have a bigger issue with rate with base broadening?
Yes, and
because you know, let's say hypothetically that somebody wanted to raise $300 million off of the property tax or off of the sales tax, and there was a proposal either to raise it 0.25% or extend it to some other items. You would have a built-in lobbying force, say, extend it to more items, because then you're giving more juice to the local option sales taxes.
Yes, Mr. That may be the bigger of the two. I've got both of them listed under this bullet point. We know that the sales tax base is always changing, and if you have a broad local sales tax authority, you would have a greater constituency for expansion of the base. You would also have great resistance to contraction of the base. And so depending on what we think the long-term agenda is for the sales tax, if it involves a lot of changing of things coming in or going out of the base, it could be more difficult to do that if you have a lot more local communities dependent on the sales tax. It's very similar, I think, to debates we have about property tax classification, where we are adjusting the base of the local property tax. The only difference is we don't have a great degree of competition yet there. So, for example, as we contemplate the streamlined sales tax project, and I know that there's a presentation scheduled later, to do some of the things that we have to do to be in compliance with that might be more difficult for us if we had already more local sales taxes. So it's kind of, in a way, it's a blessing that we don't have too many at this point, given the work that we have to do.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. But I'm trying to get a feel for how far down that road we already are. On the first page of your four-page handout, you have currently 10 cities plus Cook County impose a sales tax representing 20% of the state sales tax base and 24% of the CI. I wonder what percent of the state's population that is. It seems to me that these significant number of the state's population already under that. I mean, I think we're too far down that road. You know, the Minnesota Chamber makes a similar case, but I think that would make sense or more sense if we didn't have so many already. You didn't think we were too far down that road already, but I think we are. I think that, cat's already out of the bag or whatever you want to phrase it as, but I think we're already there. I think you have that same problem now.
Norman, I think it's about 22% of the population just doing the quick math of the 10 areas. Representative Quisley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just following up to what you were talking about earlier, in my district, called Walmarts and the others that have come into the area, and the effect that has had on the surrounding towns where they lose business, they also lose tax base when those businesses close. And seeing the regional centers are going and doing that more and more to the small towns, and there seems to be somewhat of an argument in this study that it should be the regional centers that get these 0.5% sales taxes. Will that do more social engineering where you actually speed up having the regional centers basically be sucking the surrounding areas dry as they are being more and more drawing businesses and drawing the customers in because the businesses will not be able to survive in the surrounding towns?
Mr. Salamone.
Mr. Chair, certainly I think absent any other kind of policy interventions, you might, if you just had a broad authority for regional projects and only provide that to regional centers, you could accelerate what you're talking about.
Representative Quisley.
Mr. Chair, to follow up on that, if you going to allow that to happen, won't that require the legislature, I hate to get in the LGA debate, require more subsidization for those small cities in order for them to survive? It seems like a catch-22 here. If you start allowing the 0.5% to be only on regional centers, we're going to end up having to subsidize the small cities to keep them in the survivable mode. And you know, we're trying to set good tax policy. So I'm just wondering, does it look like down the road then you're going to have to probably subsidize those small cities with more general fund revenue in order to keep them alive?
Mr. Salamone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, I think you're sort of stuck with that. I'm sorry.
I mentioned LGA and I got switched. That's fine. I'm just kidding.
Sorry. I think you're stuck with the problem either way. That is, if you did a general authority without regard to regional definitions or projects, you would have an unequal distribution of tax base and data coming up. It's not more suggestive than complete that the distribution of sales, retail sales, is much more uneven than the distribution of taxable market value.
Representative Quisley.
And Mr. Chair, I would agree upon about that. I've been approached by several members, both sides of the aisle, about local option sales taxes for transportation projects. And you can solve the metropolitan area problems by maybe solving by 0.5% sales tax. But what does that do for greater Minnesota? Basically nothing. If you have it, if you have in greater Minnesota only doing it for regional centers who have a great tax base, you, of course, can do a lot of transportation projects. But if you have like, I don't know, Virginia, Eota in my district, Dover, which basically has no sales tax base, they're basically a suburb of, or not suburb, but bedroom community of Rochester with no retail space, they can generate nothing. So it's a quandary that I'm in, trying to figure out if it's a good idea for Minnesota to do that for transportation projects, because you really have a lot of have-nots and haves on transportation policy and how you divide that up. So it's a discussion that's being generated in my community. Rochester wants an extension for their transportation projects. I think it's $32 million to extend to their sales tax to do transportation projects. You can say they're regional in nature, but they have the ability to, with sales tax, to generate that. You go Virginia, some other places in the state, they'll never have that. They still won't be able to get their transportation projects done.
Well, I'll give you a better one, Representative Queasley, because of the Dakota County proposal, and I was in the press on that. I doubt that there are a dozen gas stations in Grant County. They got roads in Grant County, and they have road needs in Grant County, but I doubt that they have a dozen gas stations in Grant County. So, you know.
And I agree with that. That's another proposal that's being floated. So we got...
Surprised, Representative Dorman?
No, I'm just going to thank Representative Queasley for laying the LGA case out. I appreciate him stating why that's an important program. You got it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dorman, I'm trying not to make it worse. There might be some current concerns, but I am concerned about statewide tax policy, and local option sales tax can compound it if we do not watch how we're doing it. And I know Albert Lea is kind of a regional center in itself, but when you look at the towns around Albert Lea, what it does to them, it might not be the wisest tax policy. So I'm trying to take a statewide perspective.
Commissioner Salamone.
Mr. Chair, I think we're hearing some of the reasons why we don't have a lot of local sales taxes. I think there are good arguments, good points. So we were talking about the state and local competition for the sales tax base. Clearly, administrative problems, I don't think there are any significant administrative problems in broad expansion of the sales tax, in part because we have all the uniformity provisions we have already have in statute, and there will be additional ones coming from the streamlined sales tax project, which would not really, I think, raise a lot of issues in terms of administration or cost. There may be issues with regard to how balanced our overall system is. There's sort of an unwritten rule that we ought to use income, sales, and property roughly equal proportions. I provide information in the report that shows that by that standard, the sales tax looks a little bit underutilized and the other two slightly overutilized. Obviously, you wouldn't make a case for local sales tax based on the data alone, but it's kind of an interesting piece of information. I think it's true that the sales tax is less volatile than the income tax, and certainly, less volatile than the income tax and more volatile than the property tax. More important are the questions of tax-based disparities that we were talking about. And if you look at the next column, what we did was look at the distribution of retail sales across 25 communities that were selected to sort of represent the entire state. And we calculated their retail sales tax per capita as a percentage of the statewide average. And it ranges for the sales tax from 44% to 276%. That compares to 30% for the local property tax per capita, 30% to 105. Gives you an idea of a much wider distribution of capacity, which would be a real challenge from the point of view of state policy if we were to have a local sales tax on a big scale. There is a question in the literature about whether if communities have a local sales tax, whether that would cause them to not to be less likely to cooperate on projects and the delivery of public services. That is, if they're competing for retail sales, it'd just be more of a competitive environment. That might not be a good thing. Some data there about the effect of a sales tax change on gross sales from the literature. And maybe perhaps one of the other important issues is the question of fairness. Sales tax is regressive, although ours is probably less regressive than many others around the country. But it is regressive. It's less regressive, though. It's more regressive than the property tax, which may be a surprise. But according to our incident study, it is more regressive than the property tax, but less regressive than the excise taxes, the cigarette tax, the liquor taxes, and so on. So to the extent that we are concerned about the overall regressivity or progressivity of the tax structure, which we report to you in the incident study every 2 years, adding more sales taxes will tend to make the system more regressive. And final point is federal deductibility. Just a reminder, I probably don't have to remind this group, that the sales tax is not deductible on the federal income tax. Property and income taxes are. And so if we do more sales tax as a part of our revenue system, it's a greater burden on local residents. We're less likely, we are not able to, in fact, export a part of that burden through the federal tax system to taxpayers all over the country. Those are the policy considerations that need to be discussed if you're thinking of any major expansion. A few comments on our public hearings. We had three public hearings in September. We went to Brainerd, Rochester, and St. Paul. Folks came in from the surrounding areas and gave us their take on the local sales tax. What we heard is summarized in three broad categories here. The first is criticism of the current process. I think we got an earful from communities about the process used to approve local sales taxes. The feeling that we picked up was that there was a feeling that there is not an objective criteria for approval. There's a lot of uncertainty about whether their proposal will meet with approval or non-approval. There's frustration in not knowing that in advance to any degree of certainty, so they can't make good decisions about how much to invest in preparing a proposal without information on what would constitute a good proposal. No opportunity to learn from existing decisions on the local sales tax. So that, there was no disagreement on that point in the public hearings that we held. There was a little variety of opinion on the role of the local sales tax in the overall system. There were three types of views. One was that it's time for the sales tax to be provided as a needed supplement to the property tax. There are certainly people out there who feel that way. This view was primarily held by low-tax communities, communities with low tax base, and communities with high overburden, feeling that it's time for a general authority for as a supplement. That wasn't the majority view, however. The majority view was that the sales tax ought to be limited to large capital projects having a regional nature, and in places where there is less than adequate tax capacity. So it's large projects, regional characteristics, and in places that might not be able to make a significant contribution from local revenues. That was the dominant view, and we picked up on that in some of our recommendations. The third view was simply one that recognizes that it's very badly distributed. Retail sales is very uneven. So it was sort of a cynical view, I think, that this is all about the haves versus the have-nots. We do have a lot of small communities in Minnesota, and we do have a lot of highly concentrated regional centers. And I think there was a reflection in this view that this would not play out very well if we had a general authority. This was a view of many small cities and some suburbs that have limited retail base. The final set of comments from our public hearings related to things we've already talked about, the need for equalization, that certainly we would want to have some sort of equalization program if we had a local sales tax. Otherwise, we would have large winners and losers. That would not be particularly appealing. There was a surprise in that we did not pick up any support for, I should say, very, very little support for a local general sales tax. That is, the focus seemed to be on having a local sales tax for projects, not general revenue. That was a little of a surprise for me. I did expect to hear more about more of a general use. On the question of whether there would be, whether tax capacity of a community should be a factor in granting authority, we picked up in our hearings that if it was for general uses, then tax capacity would be a relevant consideration. If it's for projects, significant projects, it would be less important. And of course, on the general question of an LGA offset for local sales tax, we picked up absolutely no support for that.
Cities and counties don't want an LGA offset for local sales tax.
That's what we heard, Mr. Chair.
I am absolutely astonished at that. Representative Broad, then Representative Dorman. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Salamone, I'm not astonished, but the new LGA formula really is the basis for the ability to pay. And don't these local option sales taxes obviously increase a community's ability to pay? For example, if a regional project, a library is deemed to be a regional project in one area, but a small community builds their own, the small community obviously has to take that money out of something else, whereas the larger community has the ability to spend on other things.
Mr. Salamone.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Broad, if you're asking me whether I would support taking into account tax capacity in an LGA formula when we're doing a new authority, I would agree with what we heard in our hearings, the view that if it's for general uses, it seems to make sense to me that you count it as revenue capacity in the LGA formula, because it is completely identical in character to their property tax revenue, which we don't have much debate about here in terms of that it's in the revenue raising portion of the LGA formula. So I would, if you're proposing that, I would agree with that view, that if it's general sales tax revenue, it ought to be in. Maybe there's more of a debate about whether project revenues ought to be counted. I think there's less clarity there, but I could be comfortable not counting that.
Representative Dorman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, well, I'm confused, I guess, because unless I'm not remembering last session correctly, but I think in the house tax bill, I think the sales tax revenues, half of them, if I recall, were counted as revenue, mm-hmm. but in the proposal that came from the administration through you, they weren't recognized at all, and now you seem to be saying you would support that. I'm just kind of trying to, if you could help me understand that. Or do I have it wrong?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, I'm trying to remember myself. I don't think you think you're right. I don't think we had it in our proposal. I guess I wasn't being radical enough. I didn't oppose it being put in the committee.
Just shows you, Representative Dorman, that sometimes speakers don't even listen to their tax chairs. Representative Dorman.
No wish listen to the transportation chair either. Yeah.
Commissioner Salamone. Did I answer your question, Representative Dorman?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, you did, and I think the commissioner did as well, but I think that was an interesting part of how, I think, frankly, how that bill made it out of the House last year, and it was no shock to me when it got changed back so it would pass again. And, you know, I know we're not supposed to talk about, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff, but from my view, that's sure what it looked like last year. And so I think it's kind of an interesting discussion.
Commissioner.
A few more comments on input, and then we'll quickly run through our recommendations. We did pick up support for having expiration dates and for the need to be have these authorities reauthorized and under new referendums. That was seemed to be support for that. There was support for having a regional referendum where there's a significant amount of tax exporting, and that's reflected in our recommendations. I'm not sure mechanically how that would work, but it seemed to us to be a good idea to try to have a sense of the surrounding community when there's a request for a sales tax for a project that has a high level of tax exporting. We also picked up comments along the lines that I was talking about when I talked about the state local competition for the sales tax base, a concern that we need to get our sales tax where we think it needs to be in terms of reform before we add more local sales taxes. And I won't go into what that might, what those reforms might be. Our recommendations are coming to five.
Do your recommendations, Commissioner. I wish to acknowledge a new member of our committee. We recognized Representative Houseman earlier from Washington County. Representative Ray Vandeveer actually volunteered, actually asked to serve on the tax committee. So welcome aboard, Representative Vandeveer, and we look forward to your input as the session goes forward. Representative Vandeveer.
Obligatory treats, which I will now pass out.
This is a hungry group, Representative Vandeveer.
Well, just in case I brought some.
Thank you, Representative Vandeveer. Your legislation has a good future. Commissioner Salamone.
We have five recommendations, some sub-recommendations. I'll quickly read them to you. But we recommend that we continue to limit the local sales tax authority to fund specific projects rather than for general revenue purposes. By the way, Mr. Chair, I would characterize these recommendations. I did characterize them the other day as current law with a little tune-up. So these are not earth-shaking recommendations, although a few of them might be quite different. The second is that we should design evaluation criteria in a way that limits the use of local sales tax to extraordinary capital projects having a regional impact. Now, it's our preference that we at least try to come up with a set of criteria that would get at what those projects are rather than having a list of projects that we deem to be regional in nature. That is, try to get at the attributes rather than just having a list of hospital airports and so on. We make that recommendation, although we don't provide that list. That's we had to leave some work left over for the future here. Third, we recommend that surrounding communities that will pay a large share of a sales tax, a new sales tax, participate in an approval referenda. And this gets at the question I think Representative Queasley was talking about, where you have a high level of tax exporting. It might be a good idea when a proposal is brought to the legislature for the communities involved or the community making the request to come in and show that there's support in the surrounding area having had a referendum in those areas. We recommend that we consider the strength of applicant communities' tax base when evaluating requests for the local sales tax. Even though we say that we ought to limit this to projects, we think it's relevant to look at what kind of contribution might be made locally in the process of evaluating the proposal. And finally, Mr. Chair, we think that the approval process ought to be kept in the legislature and tightened up a bit. And we obviously, in revenue, would be expecting that we would work very closely with members in designing that process or redefining that process. We think there ought to be established and published criteria for approval, getting at the concerns we heard from communities about not knowing what's really required of them. The sales tax be, again, required for capital projects, that communities demonstrate a need based on insufficient revenue capacity to some extent, that we should look favorably on multi-jurisdictional proposals, particularly those for which there has been a local referendum, and we suggest that favor having proposals with clear ending dates as opposed to open-ended authorities. And finally, and I think, Mr. Chair, you do some of this, that you sort of, we recommend that you dedicate hearing dates and hear these local sales tax proposals together as a group so you can make better comparisons of one against another. That might improve the process. And, Mr. Chair, that is the end of my summary.
Representative Coles and then Representative Earhart, and we are going to get to a separate sheet that provides a little bit more information that was prepared by Dr. Wilson and Pat Dalton, and I want to get to that so that we can at least finish this issue today. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Salamone, can you tell me how the administrative costs the department incurs administering the various local sales tax options are covered? Does the department get a taste, if you will, from the local sales taxes to cover those expenses?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I may defer on the details, but we do administer, and we're required by law now to administer local sales taxes. The only exception currently is the City of Duluth, and it's scheduled to be administered by the department beginning in calendar 06. We do charge for our direct and indirect costs, I think, for administering those taxes. For any community, it's certainly a better deal than if they had to build the infrastructure to administer their own sales tax. I don't know whether there's a summary number we can give you on what the cost is. I think it probably depends on a lot of factors. But generally, yes, we do it, and we do charge for our time.
It falls on the businesses.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Paul,
am I correct then in understanding that the charge that the department has offsets the cost? There's no general fund, or there's no other revenues being used to cover the administrative costs.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct. It is a cost-based charge, and we're not. We're not making money for the state on the deal. Much as that would be attractive in these days.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, aren't there examples where specific local projects have the sales tax has been continued on or used for other projects rather than what they were specifically dedicated for, so that they're kind of ongoing rather than...
Mr. Chair,
Minneapolis, I believe. I may be wrong.
Mr. Chair, I believe there are instances. Obviously, there are reauthorizations, but with regard to changing uses, I would defer to the chair. I don't know
Representative
the details.
I think the other one, Representative Queasley, that's always using is the ever-morphing Rochester sales tax.
You know how much I support that, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Mankato has changed. Wilmer's expired and Winona's expired, although I see Representative Pulowski is so excited about the prospect of a Winona sales tax, he has two bills in. I think, yeah, St. Paul, it passed this committee on a 13 to 12 vote, Representative Mullery. I was one of the 12. You've lost weight, too. Good job. Good job. Representative Dorman.
Who hasn't lost weight? I'm on the Atkins Plus diet. Eat everything along that Atkins diet and then other stuff, too.
So. I was trying to help our beef industry, Representative
Dorman. Absolutely. Norman. Pork, actually, more than...
I eat pork, too, Representative.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I've got a couple questions about the document, the full document, and maybe you can help me understand this. If I read your letter, I read from it, based on its research, the department finds that the current process for authorizing local sales taxes is essentially sound. But then if I flip to page number three, you state that many more local sales and use taxes have been proposed and have been approved by the legislature. In general, there is no substantial difference between the types of projects approved and those not approved. That seems to contradict each other. And then if I go back to page 15, you have a paragraph there talking about how people thought it was, you're talking about power politics. I haven't been here since only 99, but that's the way it's worked. And so I'm kind of curious who disagrees with that, the nonpartisan staff, which nonpartisan staff and legislators, because I would have an opposite view, at least since I've been here. But they don't seem to, your opening letter says it's essentially sound. And what makes that sound?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, essentially sound, referring to the fact that we do currently require communities to come in here with a proposal. We weren't making, it wasn't intended to be a judgment on the quality of each decision. The process was essentially sound. your comment, and I'm still looking for it on page 3 of where we say cities that...
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, page 3 about 40% of the way down the paragraph, okay. Beginning with many. And the second sentence is, in general, there is no substantial differences between the types of project approved and those not approved. If it's not power politics at play, how do you, I mean, that's the only thing I've seen. So if you've got some other information, I sure would like to have that.
Chair, that paragraph refers to, it was responding to the question in the mandate as to whether there were any differences in how the revenues would have been used between sales taxes that are in place and those that were not implemented. And maybe that's a typo that I think it might have referred to, maybe it's better read types of projects imposed and those not imposed. That is, in Appendix G, there's a list of sales taxes that were approved by the body, but not implemented for various reasons at the local level. They couldn't get the voter approval or whatever. And we looked at the differences in the uses of those two and found no significant difference. They were largely the types of projects that are currently being funded.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Norman, did you examine the approval process here at the legislature, which I think, you know, we're asking you to do? How do we do it? I mean, we're fair and uniform, or is it kind of a hodgepodge? Or?
Mr. Chair, thank you. That's a good question to clarify. The comment in the letter was responding to the public hearings that we held, and we're passing along to you what we heard. We were not making a separate judgment. We did not sort of audit the process. So it was not meant to be a judgment on our part about the quality of those decisions. We're passing on to you the perception out there about the process.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you. Commissioner, then help me with this. There are people in Albert Lea who don't like local option sales tax. They're not going to vote for it if it ever gets there. But I've heard from a couple of them who have no idea how it can be perceived as sound and fair that Rochester has one, Mankato has one, St. Paul, Minneapolis, yet we don't have the option. And so, you know, I think a lot of this is, if there were none, I think a lot of things you have in this report make some sense. But given where we're at, how do you explain it to them? I can't. All I can say is it is power politics, which is, you know, later in the report you seem to think it's not. But that's the only explanation I can give to them. I don't know how else you say that the current system, the way we operate it, has been fair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dorman, lost my train of thought, but the communities you mentioned, Albert Lea, the every city has the same right to come to this body with a proposal, and so that to that extent, it's a fair process. What we picked up in the hearings were people saying they weren't sure why some were approved and some weren't, and to the extent that we can provide more objectivity about how we do that, and they can learn from the actions of the body, then that perception will go away, and there'll be maybe a better feeling about the process and the outcome of the process. That's the thrust of our recommendations, is to try to get to that point.
Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In listening to Representative Dorman, I guess I feel like Representative Dorman, that there is politics at play, although I would guess from looking at the history that it was probably much stronger before you and I came here. It seems that the history of them probably did have a lot to do with politics, but since you and I have been on the tax committee, I think the tax committee has been pretty equally saying no to almost everyone, with a few exceptions since we've
been
here.
One exception.
Right, and I think that, Mr. Chair, to that point, I don't think we, you know, I guess I'll let the chair talk about it if he wants, but I would term that as power politics at its most abused form in that one. But
well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dorman, do you want to put in a bill to expire the Duluth sales tax?
Hadn't thought about it, Mr. Chair.
Only one used for general fund purposes. It's been in place for 30 years. Can you put in a bill on that, Representative Berman?
Would you like one jacketed, Mr. Chair? I'm not sure. That wasn't put in when I was in the legislature, Mr. Chair.
Or maybe we can do the St. Paul sales tax. I don't mean to pick on just DFL areas, in which the promoters insisted that there not be voter approval. Want to have an expiration date subject to a voter override, Representative Berman? See, to some extent, these are what I would call in the zoning area pre-existing uses. And I think that what Commissioner Salamone's report shows up is that there are some pre-existing uses that aren't necessarily good policy and in retrospect ought to be revisited. But, you know, if it's the will of the committee to tell the city of Duluth on a date certain they're going to lose 12% of their general fund.
Mr. Chair, my comments were on the St. Cloud provision that's been enacted since I've been in the legislature.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Covino.
To that point, you know.
And then, which expires in 2005, Representative Dorman.
Maybe I'm missing something here because I'm not the brightest person at this table, but what the hell, we're politicians. Of course politics is played around this place. I mean, that's what we are.
Oh, I would agree.
You know. And Mr. Chair, on a date certain, the biggest community in my district loses about 40% of its general fund.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lanchowski.
I did want to ask a question.
You have the right to.
Mr. Chair, I'm asking a question, kind of for comment. Because on a date certain, you're a few years out, Virginia loses about 40% of its general fund because the LGA changes.
I have a solution, Representative Pagina. We'll eliminate the taconite production tax, we'll go to an ad valorem tax, and we'll let the chips fall where they may. Representative Lanchowski.
Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
How about we just split the state and you support me and we'll start a new state?
Representative Rukavina, I will vote to allow those counties out if I have the absolute ironclad commitment that you will be the first governor of the new state.
All I can promise you is I promised the city of Duluth that they would be the capital and that I would be running for governor. Unless we can rig the election. That's the only promise I can give.
Representative Franceschi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In responding to Representative Dorman's comment, what I was then going to say is, you know, the political part of it, I've always had the position that it should be all or none. I've never liked that, you know, cities come here and want one particular thing. So as people have asked me to co-author bills over the last five sessions on these local option sales taxes, I've told everyone, you know, no, because I think it should be all or none. I don't think it should be an unfair system. But I have to say, reading this report and being here, I think it should be none. I you know, moving from all or none to none. And I guess, you know, one of the things I would ask Mr. Salamone to comment on, or the chair, in reading the study, I noticed the study did mention that these kinds of winner and loser problems can increase the pressure, as Representative Queasley and Representative Dorman raised on LGA questions, other equalization processes. But I've always thought that and this probably doesn't apply to Greater Minnesota, but in the metro, there have been communities that have made a conscious decision and, in fact, applied great effort to ensure that they don't have a corridor or a sector of their local economy that would provide a good sales tax base. So they have shunned the unpopular things like auto dealerships and bars and restaurants and hotels and large developments with lots of congestion and traffic and all the things that come with a commercial industrial corridor. And instead, they've chosen to become a bedroom community. And they get all the benefits of that nice, quiet community and none of the downside that goes with the huge commercial industrial corridors of the state. And so they would be, in an equalization process, be treated differently, sort of rewarded for that behavior. And the communities who've taken and sought out and created commercial industrial jobs corridors for the state of Minnesota get penalized in those processes. And I think we tend to forget that the cities that are doing that have a huge downside to their residents who are living in it. And I guess, you know, this study doesn't suggest in any way that part of creating a good sales tax base is there's a big downside for your community. And I would just hope in the future that we could find a way to recognize that, because there are suburbs in the metro who have made sure to shut the gates and keep all these unwanted things out and let the rest of us carry them. And then say, and we need the tax money you're now generating, because we, you know, we don't have CI base. And I just think it's continually a small group who is funding that, and not a lot of recognition here at the legislature that we have a negative that goes with that.
Representative Yarrow.
Oh, I just want to go back to Duluth, if I may.
Tonight we get to,
but I will.
I remember sales tax was a big issue in the 66 election. I couldn't even vote until 67. Ben Boo was the first mayor that I voted for. Actually, I voted for Republican. I didn't know what he was, but anyway. he looked the best. But the sales tax, Duluth, and, you know, I prefer income tax. I think we should have local income tax rather than property tax. But sales tax is in between. And it was, you know, Representative Al France, Jim Uland, I believe, and Munger, that passed that at the same time that the sales tax was created or passed in Minnesota. I believe it was proposed by Governor Levander.
Went over his overridden veto.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. I remember he was at the university and he said there was no sales tax and he wasn't going to support sales tax. Okay, that's right. Okay, so and sales tax is not as progressive as income tax, but I think our sales tax in Minnesota is much better than, for example, South Dakota, which only exempts haircuts and funerals from their sales tax. Okay, we exempt groceries and so on. I lived in the state of Virginia when I left the legislature in 1980 and joined the Foreign Service, and every time we went to the grocery store, they rang up, 4 or 5 or 6% in sales tax, which I thought was regressive. Anyway, but, you know, I think that I would support general sales tax imposition to give a local government extra money to keep those property taxes down. I think it would help. I think we should give all cities and local governments local option to impose sales tax. It's much preferable to property tax, you know. And the property tax is going to be rising. It's rising already. It's going to get even higher.
Ah. A segue into the very brief presentation by Pat Dalton and Paul Wilson. There's a single sheet that builds on table one in the handout. And it's true that there have been some very major changes since fiscal year 2000, but could somebody describe, either Pat or Paul, the last column and what that shows as to how we compare with the others, which is kind of interesting, at least to me, but, you know, I get interested on some rather strange things, so. Paul, please identify yourself.
Paul Wilson, fiscal analyst, House Representative. The one page essentially builds on a table that is found on page 10 of the report, of the full report, and is found on the last page of the summary.
And what it basically shows is that compared to other states, and this is for fiscal year 2000, and the 2001 bill really didn't take effect until fiscal year 2003, as far as all the changes. And we made other changes last year, which won't really take effect till FY05. But what it basically shows is that the locals' reliance on the property tax is about the same as in other states as far as their total types of revenue. our dependence on sales tax is much less, but it's made up mainly through state aids, is basically how I would describe it. And I think that anybody who tries to extrapolate changes made 2001 or 2003 and say that this is what the answer is going to be, I think that they may be making a mistake unless they sit down and think about all the changes and rework it. Probably couldn't be reworked until next year as far as the 2003 changes. Am I incorrect in that, Dr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, I think that's correct.
We can capture the 2001 changes relatively soon, I would suspect, but for 2003, it's basically a two-year fiscal year lag time.
Mr. Chair, I think the emphasis here is just to add the state aid into the picture, which wasn't in the picture in the report. That what Minnesota, to some extent, had decided in the past to give more state aid rather than allowing some more options at the local level for taxes.
Any further questions or comments? The Representative Zellers.
This isn't related to our presentations, but I think I just experienced my first Democratic caucus because I think Representative Yaros just gave the first volley for his pitch to up against Representative Recovina for governor of our new state we're creating.
We have a name for this state yet?
Superior.
I have an idea. Why don't we have a name the state contest in the tax committee?
Mr. Chair, they're going to have a local income tax. Did you hear that?
You don't think that's a great name?
State of
Superior?
Yeah. Superior state. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I remember a former legislator from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan used to write to us about the 51st state. He must have died because I haven't heard from him for about 20 years. But he was proposing it. I thought it was a good idea to name it the State of Superior.
Mr. Chair, that's what it's the bill states, that it'll be the State of Superior. And I will say, you know, at the tax committee that we will probably have some of the highest non-residential lakeshore taxes in the United States of America.
And you know something, Representative Rukavina, in your petition for statehood, you may want to exempt the new state from all the trade laws that have passed and all the federal laws that have passed, and basically have your own foreign policy and just have this new state rely on the federal government for defense, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, Ontario is still an option, too. But that's harder to do.
Well, when Representative Anderson was Speaker, there was a couple battleships included in the bonding bill for use on Rainy Lake. So, members, what we're going to do is we will meet next Wednesday for sure, probably next Thursday. We very rarely meet on Mondays, and we'll not meet next week on Tuesday. You know, we're going to be mainly in a holding pattern and hearing some stuff until the forecast comes out and we figure out where we are. But that's the plan. And again, if anybody has any questions or concerns, my door is open. That meeting adjourned.